you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes, too, when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
We continue our conversation on police reform 1 year after the murder of George Floyd with a discussion on qualified immunity. Now, you heard Austin Cross bring it up earlier when we spoke. Well, qualified immunity requires anyone suing a police officer for misconduct to prove the officer knowingly violated their constitutional rights. And it sets a very high bar for that proof. Critics of qualified immunity say it effectively shields police officers from accountability. That's why some states and federal lawmakers are trying to scale it back or just get rid of it altogether. But how much effect would doing away with it have? Well, here to talk about this is Jody David Armour, Roy P. Crocker Professor at the USC Gould School of Law. Jody, welcome back.
Great to be with you, eh?
All right. Now, this idea of qualified immunity was put on the books back in 1960s, or in the 60s, I should say. Why? What's the history there?
Well, yeah, it goes back to really post-Civil War. Right afterward, the Congress got together, enacted Section 1983. It was called the Ku Klux Klan Act because it was meant to give Black citizens especially rights against state officials, state actors, who often stood by and let Ku Klux Klan violence be inflicted on Black communities. And so they gave Blacks a way to go to court and seek financial compensation, financial redress for the failure of the state actors to protect their constitutional rights against the Ku Klux Klan. Then they used that all the way until the mid-60s. Mm-hmm. It was used through the Civil Rights Movement to vindicate Black rights until the Supreme Court started to limit your ability to sue state actors who violate your constitutional rights. And they moved from a standard of kind of strict liability, just anytime someone violates your rights, you can bring an action irrespective of their mental state, to one of, you know, if the officer made a good faith mistake, we'll excuse the constitutional violation. That was the early part. If it's reasonable and honest, then they expanded the immunity a lot more and started saying, unless you have a case that is just like an earlier case in which a court said that was a violation of a constitutional right, unless your case looks exactly like that case or nearly exactly like it, the officer enjoys qualified immunity and you cannot recover from it.
So layers keep getting laid upon this to protect.
Yes, it's evolved. It's grown accretions over time until now it's where a lot of people, both lawmakers and others, call it almost a kind of immunity. Almost a simple shield against accountability for officers who violate citizens' constitutional rights.
Because I was going to ask you next, Jody, like, how does qualified immunity typically play out in practice, considering what we just discussed?
Well, yeah, it happens at the trial court level. As you bring your case against a police officer who, for example, I'll give you one concrete case. A prison official went through a jail cell and he squirted mace at a prisoner for no reason because he was sitting in his cell. He didn't like the way he looked. Or another police officer shot at a dog that was among a group of kids and hit a kid, even though the dog was not posing any threat. In both cases, both the corrections officer and the police officer got the benefit of qualified immunity because the trial court judge said, I don't see any other case in which an officer, a corrections officer, sprayed mace into a prisoner's face. So he gets qualified immunity there. And then another judge said, I don't see any other case where an officer shot recklessly into a crowd of children to shoot an innocuous dog. I don't see any case just like that. So the officer gets the benefit of qualified immunity. So that's how it plays out in practice.
It might be a silly question to ask you next, Jody, but okay. So as we mentioned, it's central to some of the reform legislation being worked out at the federal level, the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act being what's drafted by California Congresswoman Karen Bass. Why is it so essential then that this be done away with? I mean, considering everything you just mentioned, it seems like it's very easy to make that connection, but why is it for some something that's crucial?
Well, some think that you need to give officers this added elbow room, this added protection, so that they don't second guess themselves, so that they don't hesitate in an urgent moment for fear of some kind of liability, you know, that they might lose their assets because these are all civil actions. This doesn't apply to criminal, only civil actions for money damages that they might fear civil liability. But recent studies have shown that over 99, well over 99% of officers have never had to pay a penny for any judgments against them, any civil actions, any money damages that have been recovered for their misconduct. The money is always gotten from insurance funds of some kind. So the officers aren't really facing any personal threat to their liability, or rather to their well-being. And it's now, I think it's mainly taken on a symbolic significance for many people. Many people hang on to qualified immunity as a way of protecting officers from what they consider to be over-aggressive attempts to hold them accountable. And so this gives them extra elbow room. But you can see that a lot of people are arguing that we should go the other way.
Now, a year after George Floyd's death, despite pledges to get something done, a police reform bill is still not sitting on President Biden's desk. How much do you think, Jody, that the disagreement over qualified immunity is holding things up right now?
Yeah, it seems to be an important kind of linchpin for some. You know, initially conservatives were saying they weren't going to support it, people like Tim Scott and others. But now they said they may be able to come back to the table, ready to come back to the table if we can find ways not to hold officers personally liable, but maybe their departments, and shift the attention from, you know, the individual to somehow the institution. And so there might be some room for some compromise here. But it's a real, I think, for many, symbolic matter. You know, the idea that officers should be held responsible for their, you know, a negligence or even recklessness, some worry will lead them to, you know, to unwarranted liability.
Well, let me ask you this then, because so after George Floyd was murdered, it seemed like ending qualified immunity, or at least, you know, really scaling it down, was a bipartisan thing. And it seems like that is no longer the case. What do you think happened to that unity that we heard last year?
Yeah, it is interesting because this is a story that both sides, but left and right, have been able to agree on. I hear people who are, you know, kind of libertarian and conservatives, yeah, who are wary about, you know, state actors and over-concentrated state power. They don't like the idea of state actors enjoying a kind of, you know, carte blanche, a kind of almost immunity shield from, you know, responsibility for violating the rights of citizens. So they care about that stuff, civil liberties, very seriously. And then you have a lot of people on the left, Black Lives Matter and others, who see racial justice dimensions to these kinds of cases. The fact that you're not incentivizing police departments to root out the bad apples by allowing them not to even be held liable in the first place. So it looked like there was this room for, you know, bipartisan, you know, agreement on this, but I think maybe some of that symbolic stuff is what, you know, some people kind of have a knee-jerk reaction against any doctrine that might hold police officers more accountable, even if they don't fully understand the doctrine. You know, it's like critical race studies. What does it even mean anymore? Now it's become kind of an empty label, a signifier, right? And I think for some people, qualified immunity is such a signifier.
Let me ask you this. If qualified immunity is off of this, is it still worth moving forward with this in Congress?
Yeah, you know, even with qualified immunity, even if there was a complete repeal of qualified immunity, it wouldn't necessarily have addressed the deep-rooted problems, okay, that activists have been getting at in the streets over the summer, right? Because there are a lot of cities like Chicago that has hundreds of millions of dollars in liability that they paid out to police officers, and they haven't reformed their police practices very much in spite of those huge awards and settlements, right? So it's not clear that just removing qualified immunity is suddenly going to get police departments to start acting in what many consider a more responsible way. But it is some reform change. This is always a reform bill, not a transformational bill, but reform. And so it's still going to talk about body cameras and some things that people are going to find useful, but it's still not getting at the kind of deeper going issue of unbundling the police and reimagining safety that people were asking for over the summer in the streets.
Is transformational change more likely to happen on the state level as opposed to the federal level?
Yeah, that's what we've seen certainly here in LA. You know, we saw transformational change after the summer's grassroots activism. Voters in LA went to the ballot box and ousted a traditional law and order DA, Jackie Lacey, first Black woman DA in LA County, and replaced her with a person who ran on a progressive prosecutor platform, George Gascon. And then they also voted for Measure J, which was essentially a kind of defund the police measure, right? Unbundle them. You know, it commits 10% of the county's unrestricted funds. That's up to $1 billion a year to incarceration and police alternatives. So, yes, it really has gotten the attention of many voters, this whole set of issues. And whatever happens with qualified immunity, I think this issue is going to be one on our radar for a while to come.
But for the soul of this nation, Jody, for it to happen on the federal level, is that necessary for the soul of this nation and for this nation's perception in the world to be different?
Yeah, it would certainly be an important symbolic, affirmation that we all, no matter what meridian, no matter what latitude in this nation, we all are committed to a certain kind of equality and equal justice for all. And for that to come from the federal level certainly would be great. We'll have to see if we can get it.
That's Jody Armour, Roy P. Crocker Professor of Law at USC. Jody, as always, thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot, A.
The LAS Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAS.com/sweeps.